So there is a hashtag for this session, as I'm sure has been every other session. So if you have questions and you want to tweet them as we're presenting, it's hashtag, I'm going to get away from the mic, SX no B to B. So SX, not SEX, no B to B. Awesome. So we're going to get started. This session is everything you want to know about B2B marketing. So quick introduction of our panelists. I'm going to try not to echo here. Over there, the lovely lady sitting down is Morgan Gintney. She's the Senior Director of Marketing for Geographic Expeditions, which is an adventure travel company. Really exciting company. If you have a custom travel needs, talk to Maura. Prior to working at Geographic Expeditions, she launched the search and social program at several B2B companies, including Autodesk, and spent about 5 years doing that. I'm Lauren Vaccarella. I'm the Senior Director of Online Marketing for a small B2B company called Salesforce.com, and I run all of the online marketing for online advertising initiatives for Salesforce. So any traffic driver that comes to the Salesforce.com main site probably has something to do with me. And then the gentleman on the far end is Bill Leap. He's the CEO of a company called Apogee Results, local Austin-based company that does online marketing, specifically in the B2B field. So who here is tired of going to conferences where all they do is talk about e-commerce? And they talk about how to increase your credit card sales and how to get more people to buy t-shirts online. Is anyone here tired of going to conferences that only talk about e-com and leave the poor B2B marketers out? I am. And thankfully, we're not going to do that today. We are going to talk specifically about B2B marketing, and we're going to base it all off of a book that we wrote. So the three of us got together, tortured ourselves, and wrote a book called Complete Guide to B2B Online Marketing. It comes out on Wiley in June, so if you get really bored and you want more information of the topics we cover, go check it out on Amazon, pre-order it. That's my only pitch because I don't work in sales. So quick agenda of what we're going to be covering today. We're going to try to cover a lot in the next hour. Quick background about me. I live in San Francisco, but I'm a New Yorker at heart, so I'm used to interrupting people all the time. So we're going to give you guys the opportunity to interrupt us as well. So if you have questions, we're not necessarily going to save it for the end of the presentation. You have a question, go up to the mic. When there is some sort of pregnant pause, ask your question. Maura has candy, so if you ask questions, you might get candy.
I have bad aim. That's why we're trying to keep it to the center of the room.
If we hit you in the head, we are sorry. Quick run through of what we're going to cover. We have a lot to cover and not a lot of time, so we're going to go pretty quickly. We're going to start off with setting the B2B compass, move into search engines and other media, all the different traffic drivers. They're going to get people to your website. We're going to go into social media and PR. We're going to talk about web analytics, conversion optimization, usability, and how to get the people that come to your site to take the action you want them to take. We're going to zip into online and offline integration, talk about lead management, marketing automation, getting the most out of those leads. We're going to talk about CRM and marketing, and as marketers, how to use your CRM systems. I'm not going to talk about that part. And then we're going to talk about how online fits in the overall marketing mix. So setting the B2B compass. So B2B is different. Everyone that's in this room should know that B2B is different from B2C. There's longer sales cycles. There's multiple decision makers. So the B2B audience is different. And as B2B marketers, we need to think different. We need to think different about the conversion path, about the conversion cycle, about how to sell to a B2B buyer. So who is the B2B buyer? So like I said, in the B2B audience, there's no single decision maker. You're not selling to Maura, you're selling to a committee. People aren't going to buy a $500,000 product in a single setting. There's going to be a longer conversion cycle. People aren't going to buy your product in 2 or 3 days. A lot of times with the bigger B2B purchases, your conversion cycle is going to take months, if not years. The value of leads is going to vary dramatically in a B2B purchase. And a lot of B2B, frankly, is relationship driven. People want to trust the company that they're buying products from. With a B2B buyer, there's a lot at risk. If you're selling t-shirts online, what's the biggest thing you're risking when buying a t-shirt online? Maybe the t-shirt doesn't fit. Maybe the return policy sucks. Maybe you have to send the t-shirt back. Maybe it's not your color. Maybe the fabric's not so good. There's not a whole lot of risk there. okay, if the t-shirt doesn't fit, maybe you give it to someone else. Maybe you just throw the whole thing out and lose the $20. What if you're buying a $500,000 B2B software? What's there to risk at buying a $500,000 B2B software? Well, if the software doesn't work, you could risk your job, you can risk your reputation, you can risk your promotion, you could risk your internal credibility. If you go out and you source a new B2B product, if you're the buyer for B2B software, B2B hardware, if you're going to buy a $500,000 tractor and this doesn't work, the product fails, it's your ass. And with great success for the product, say the product does exactly what it's supposed to do, you're not going to get the credit for it because that's what the product is supposed to do. You're only going to get the blame. So there's a lot of trust that needs to be built up for the buyer. The buyer needs to trust you. They need to trust your company. They need to trust that the product is going to deliver on exactly what the promise is. So how do we build trust? Well, online marketing has a lot of channels to help you build trust within the buyer's mind. One of the first ways to build up trust is putting out thought leadership content and educational content. If you're the new guy in the marketplace, if you're not the market leader, you really need to spend time building that level of trust within your potential buyers. Put out thought leadership content, put out educational content. Video is an amazing way to build trust with different buyers. There's some great studies from eMarketer that says both video and video advertisements will increase brand favorability by 28%. That means that people are going to like you 28% more once they start seeing your video content. So that's a really powerful stat. So create some videos, get in front of your prospective buyers. Use targeted advertising that talks about the benefits of your company. Especially if you're the underdog in your industry, you want to appear bigger than you are. So use targeted advertising to do that. Leverage your PR team. Get some great PR stories out there. Get it in some niche publications so your prospective buyers and their coworkers start to see your brand in a bigger light. Also, third-party validation is very important in building trust. You want case studies about your customers. You want case studies about how your company has helped grow your customers. And write some relevant niche content to help build that trust within your user base. Okay, so like we said, we've got 8 topics to cover. I'm going to back away from that mic. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is, okay, say you've done your job, you've built up trust, everyone thinks your brand is great. Now you have to get people to your website. So how are we going to get people to our website? There's a lot of different ways to drive traffic to your website. So who knows the difference between SEO and SEM? Fantastic. Quick rundown for the few people in here who don't know the difference between SEO and SEM. The top and the right-hand side is all paid search. You'll hear it called paid search, PPC, SEM. It's all pretty much the same thing. Everything in the middle is your organic results or SEO. You can buy the results on top, and on the right-hand side, everything in the middle is going to be based on organic rankings, which we'll talk in a little bit more detail about. So quick basics of B2B SEO. Very similar to B2C in that it's all about keywords and links. With B2B, identify what the right keywords are, figure out what you want to rank for, work with your paid search team on this, and what the keywords that you want to rank for might not necessarily be the keywords with the most traffic. They're the keywords that are most likely going to lead to form completes and going to lead to sales. A big advantage that B2B has over B2C when it comes to SEO is your PR team. If you've got a killer PR team, you need to leverage your PR team. PR is going to go out. They're going to get articles, and they're going to get write-ups about your company. You want keyword-rich links in every press release that goes out. Your boilerplate should have 4 or 5 really solid keyword-rich links in there. If you're, say, your Salesforce and you're a CRM company, you want CRM as an anchor text in your boilerplate. And then also work with your partners. If you've got a large partner community, leverage your partners to get links back from your partners. Get keyword-rich links back from them. Also, site architecture is going to be really important, both for B2B and for B2C SEO. I'm not going to talk a lot about site architecture. There's a ton of it in the book. One thing to know, if your site's built in Flash, read the book because Flash really is not good for anybody.
Break the habit.
And scene. So let's talk about paid search. So is anyone familiar with this window? Have we done this before? Have we gone to Google, done a search? Fabulous. User participation gets candy, guys. I'm not above bribery. So you go to Google, you search for CRM. This is what happens. Here's your search results. You've got your organic listings. You have your paid listings. I like paid listings personally, not because I do paid search, but because in my mind, if I click on a paid listing, or I'm going to go to a page that's going to give me exactly what I searched for. With organic, I may or may not get the exact result. I'm impatient. I'm going to click on the paid link. So I click on the paid link and I go to this page. So my next question is, as the marketer, what should my metrics be? Someone does a search for CRM, they click on my paid link, they go to this page, what should I be measuring? Well, when you're trying to figure out what you should be measuring, it's really simple. It goes back to how do you make money. So who here makes money off of someone filling out a form? Who here makes money out of someone buying your product? So when you're trying to figure out how to optimize your paid search program, my one tip, if the only thing you get away from this presentation from my portion, optimize your paid search campaign and all of your paid tactics to the sale. You can track sales back to all of your paid tactics fairly easy using CRM integrations, which Bill will talk about later. So the way you set up optimizing paid search to sales, someone clicks on your SEM ad, they go to a website, there's a hidden field in your form that will capture the unique tracking ID. Give every single keyword a unique tracking ID. When they fill out that form, unique tracking ID gets passed into your CRM. All of a sudden, you can attribute sales back to keywords. So super quick, what is display retargeting? Who here knows what display retargeting is? If you're not doing it, please do it before the government takes it away. What display retargeting is, someone goes to your website, they connect with your brand, they get cookied when they go to your website. That basically, think of it as polite stalking. Someone goes to your website, they get cookied, they go to some of their favorite sites. They go to TechCrunch, they go to Mashable, they go to the New York Times, and your display ads start to follow them around. So if they go to your website and they go to a page that talks about mobile healthcare apps, when they browse the web and they go to TechCrunch and they go to Mashable, suddenly your ads talking about mobile healthcare apps keep following them. You give them benefits, you give them features to tell them how amazing your mobile healthcare apps are. They click on the ad, they go back to a landing page that's designed just for them. It's a great way to make your company look even bigger than it is and to increase relevancy. It also helps build some of that brand credibility. And then last way to drive some traffic to your website that I'm going to talk about is social advertising. Ooh. So that's a great question. So we asked, I'm going to try not to hit you in the head, sir.
Score!
So he asked how we set up display retargeting, what's a great way to do it. If you're in the AdWords interface, Google lets you do display retargeting now. It's super easy to set up. You can build all of your retargeting right from Google AdWords, and you'll be able to do retargeting through the Google AdWords display network. Very, very inexpensive. There's other places you can go that'll give you more functionality than Google AdWords. Retargeters One, AdRoll is another one that are more of a startup company, but they have actually a bigger reach than just the Google Display Network, and they have some more features and functionality. One of them is Retargeter, and the other company is AdRoll. They each have pros and cons, but check those two out. Also, if you're using a DSP, a demand-side platform, you can do retargeting through them as well. Check out AdRoll or Retargeter though. And then there's tons of use cases for retargeting, and I'm totally geeking out about it for an hour, but we don't have that time because they're going to kill me. So the next part is social advertising. Has anyone run ads on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn? As B2B marketers, LinkedIn should be your best friend. LinkedIn is amazing when it comes to data segmentation. You can target people by their company on LinkedIn, by their role in a company, by the name of their company, if they're an SMB, a mid-market, an enterprise-level company. And they also have a CPC platform, so their CPC platform is really inexpensive, same targeting. So let's talk about why you would use social advertising. If you want to amplify your message, if you want a lot of people to know about what you're doing, look at promoted tweets on Twitter. Great way to get more people to know about events that are starting. You want to use promoted tweets to talk about things that are immediate and urgent. If you want to grow your community, look at Twitter's promoted accounts. Promoted accounts could let you grow your following in a targeted way for about $1 to $3, depending on your niche per user. And if you want to just highlight your product or service, use Facebook Marketplace ads or LinkedIn CPC ads. You can get in front of your audience in a really targeted, cost-efficient way. So I talked about social advertising, and Maura is going to talk about social media.
And in the meantime, while we're transitioning, any brave souls with questions and no fear of her right arm?
I have candy.
Oh, can you go up to the mic? Just we want to make sure it's recorded for the podcast.
Social advertising, do you feel like though there's pushback from people feeling like they're being advertised to in their personal space for something they do for business?
So that was a great question. She asked if people are feeling like they're being advertised for business in their personal space. We haven't hit that yet. Be careful about advertising. Oops, too much, sorry. Make sure you rotate your ads. Honestly, if you're on Facebook every few days, ads get really stale really quickly on Facebook. Also, when you're in market, be sure to come out of market, especially if you're hitting the same audience a lot. You don't want to overwhelm them. LinkedIn CPC is completely underutilized right now, and it's a great place to have business content in a business environment. With Facebook, go in market and out of market, in market and out of market, so you don't look a little like, why is Salesforce everywhere or why is your company everywhere?
The trick about a lot of this is to be as targeted, as relevant as possible, especially because in B2B you're working in a niche, right? And you want to be as close to home as possible without being creepy. And the creepy thing is really questions. Some of that is knowing your audience, knowing whether they're pleased because you've run into some sort of omniscient wizard for a butler, or whether they're creeped out because it really looks a lot like stalking. And a lot of you see a lot of these lawsuits coming up. I think one came up for Path. Mm-hmm. You know, for the kind of address book hunting that a lot of apps are doing right now. So you have to deal with a situation where there's a press reputation, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of change management, and there's a lot of potential creepiness that is on both the paid side and the natural side, both in search and in social media.
I lean more on the side of creepy than Maura does, so I'm more okay with a little creepy than Maura is. But at the end of the day, if you're not getting results, you shouldn't be doing it, but if you're getting results, you can be a little creepier.
Yeah, and you can also use things like Net Promoter Score or social sentiment to see what backlash is there. So that's the other good thing. You can see what kind of backlash there is and how people are feeling about it. And unless you're a company where you have some sort of historical negative sentiment, like Microsoft, and people still purchase from you. They like to hate you and they like to buy from you. So I'm going to come down here because I'm the hippie and I feel really strange behind the platform. And I wanted to know, who here has been in this room all day from B2B?
Yay!
10 of you. Are there more who are just really tired? I know it's the afternoon. Yes! Candy. Give that man some candy. So I'm sure that all of you working in B2B, you're having mixed reactions from your company, right? Is social media a good thing or a terrifying thing? Is this true? True, false statement. And how many of you are actually starting to publish in social media now? Okay. How many of you have been talking about it within your company for over 2 years? Yes. Okay, so this is part of the problem. And while you're trying to convince your fantastic leaders that social media will not kill them or save their lives, you have the opportunity to start listening. And that really is the thing that you can do first. While you're waiting for people to buy into it, while all of your executives are still debating about what ROI is, you can be setting up listening at a very, very low cost. And that will give you such good information about your customers without being too intrusive and without taking the risk of publishing. So it's a great starting point. And there are tools that go from 20-some dollars a month to $2,000 a topic. And that kind of thing will still help you prep. It will help you show what customers are thinking. You can start introducing it as mass focus group. Think of everything that you use to argue for search about. Everything that they loved about what they learned from intent with keywords, all of that applies over to social media. It's another validating customer point. And I'm sure everyone you work with believes that they understand the customer, but this is another source of straight from the customer's mouth. So you really can't ignore social media as a feedback loop for market intelligence and for business intelligence. It's a very important factor there that you can do without the risk of publishing. Once you start publishing, if you still have a hesitant company, this is an opportunity to use basic marketing best practices. 101, finding out what your goals are. What are they expecting from social media? Do you need to change expectations? How are you going to get there? Are you going to have strategies and then tactics? Or are you going to start tweeting on Fridays and hope that everything works out well anyway? So you have to go back to the basics, and if you have a hesitant group of people, that's an opportunity to really build it up right. But if you want to rush into it, if you're working with people who have instinct, even if you've been publishing for years, it's not too late to go back to those things and revisit them every year. When I left Autodesk about a month ago, it was the first year that we went into the fiscal year with every single industry group with a prepared social media strategy, and that had never happened before. Some of them had been out there for decades on blogs and forums, but they still hadn't thought about it from a marketing best practices point of view. And there's a lot more insight that you can get when you set things up right. It's boring, but it's good for you. Kind of like vitamins. So the other thing that's different about B2B, since we are in the B2B room, and the 10 of you have been soldiers here all day, so thank you very much. The big different thing is that you're talking about influencing different groups, and you're talking about advocates. The big thing about social media is that you can find people who love you, and they will talk for you. They will defend you if you're Intel. They'll defend you if you're Autodesk. They'll defend you if you're Salesforce. They will defend you on your behalf, and it looks much more authentic because it is. So you have this ability to use third-party advocates who believe in your thought leadership and have them exposed to millions of people. And you might be afraid of the detractors. We had a DJ who for 2 hours trashed us continuously. 2.6 million people saw that tweet by the end of the day. But by just having good customer service, by sending the PR team out, PR was the first person to talk to him, we were able to turn that around, and now he's running contests through our 3D design developer community. So even if you see someone who's trashing your company, a little kindness will actually get you a very long way. That is a different thing about B2B. It's the chance to humanize your brand, and you really have to take advantage of this.
Fewer insane people that you're dealing with in B2B than you are in B2C. So the odds of them being able to be turned around are actually a lot higher.
So that could be a really interesting study, sanity levels in B2B versus B2C. Jeffrey Cohen is here. He actually just finished a book on B2B social media. We have it covered in our book. His book is just out as well. Same publisher, so we have to do a plug over there. So if you're really struggling with this topic, that's a good place to start. Altimeter Group and a few others have some really great open research that you can use as a B2B company. Because what you're talking about is how to make this normal. And these are all good guidance to make this a normal part of marketing, and that's the really big struggle. It's not really that different. It's faster. It's deeper. It's better for your niche. It's better for your advocacy, but it's still marketing. You're still having conversations with people. You're still developing relationships, and as B2B, we should be better at that. The other thing about B2B is that we're spending more money on social already. B2B is spending way more money on employees and on strategies and on research and on tools for B2B, but we're not actually doing it as much as B2C in any given way. And this also leads into PR. There's another organization argument that every company may be happening. You may have your social media team and the web team. They might be in PR. They could be in customer service. Any of those will work. But the difference with PR is that this is going back to relations with the public. They need to be able to understand how to do this, and they need to be able to work really well with anyone who's responsible for social media. You're talking about the way journalism has changed in the last 10 years, where you look at a blogger and you say, is this someone who we should reach out to from the social media side, or is this PR's responsibility? And every company is going to have their own answer for that, but you have to have PR involved, because PR is really changing rapidly from traditional to online, and social media is really forcing that change.
Next slide.
Yes, thank you so much. So the next thing to do to get ahead in winning with B2B, we had to do this. We had a subtitle for a short time for our book that may have had to do with tiger's blood and goddesses, but we decided not to go with that. KPIs are really important, and this goes back to that marketing 101 thought. So what do you want them to do? Who do you want to talk to? Why are you doing this? That's the basic of content strategy. Why are you doing any of the marketing that you're doing? And you have to think about these things. The way to measure it and set it up is for KPIs. So the key performance indicators, the 1 to 3 goals that you have in marketing, should have a measure attached to each of them. Every goal, every measure. And that should be your main dashboard. What a lot of companies like to do is to look at how they did last year and their KPIs to compare themselves to last year. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing to do. But not you don't always and only look in the rearview mirror when you're driving. Doesn't really help you navigate turns, highway traffic. Rearview mirror only so useful. So you need to look at also competitor benchmarks. Compare to competitors, you should be able to get that information in social media pretty frequently. You can get it for search pretty frequently. There are few indicators left, especially online, where you can't look at your competitor performance at the same time. Hitwise, Compete, there are dozens of companies that help you do this. But peer as well. Is there another company that's your size, that has about the same revenue, that's in a very parallel market? Different niche, but same type of work. that's something that could be more helpful to you than the competitor that you've been looking at for 20 years. That might inspire you more. If you're in a niche group where everyone has a cartel agreement not to be that fast moving, then you can get ahead by looking at a parallel industry. And that kind of benchmark and a KPI can make a difference. The other thing that you might have all heard about lately is landing page optimization and conversion rate optimization. Do these sound like familiar acronyms? Yes, okay. I also did the second edition of Tim Ash's landing page optimization, co-author on that as well. That's out in May. But there's a lot that goes into designing a CRO test. It's not just plain A/B testing anymore. When you're looking at conversions, you have to look at a lot of factors, but you have to be able to design it so that you're not throwing a kitchen sink at an A/B test optimizer. You have to be able to isolate things. So you have to say, okay, well, I know it was the color of the call to action and not the 20 other things, including all the text and the content options and the link phrases and the different logo and the different footer. You have to be able to know what caused the impact, or you're going to be almost as lost as if you didn't do any test at all. So you have to think about all these things. And as you're doing them, there's no reason not to apply best practices through each of them. Just because it's the B of an A/B test doesn't mean you don't run spell check. So you have to really keep in mind all of the usability best practices. You may want to try throwing out what your UX team thought they knew, what your designers believed was true and firm. You should be throwing that out sometimes in A/B tests, but you should be able to isolate it, and you should still be able to compare to best practices. No reason not to do any of that. And these things are also being picked up by search engines. Search engines are looking at grammar now. The latest search update was trying to weed out all of these content farms where people are putting up 50 words of horrible content just to fill the rest of the page with links. It's supposed to hurt them. It actually helped them for a little while. But the main part is that they're trying to weed out bad writing. They're trying to weed out bad content. And that's why, in addition to thinking about it for conversion rate and authority, which is very important in trust and in B2B, you also have to go back to all the rest of the web best practices and not leave that out of your tests or how you design from day to day. I think that is the end of my particular spiel.
And we're going to be transitioning, so who wants some candy? Do you have questions?
Any more questions at candy break?
I have a question. You talked a bit about how social media really enables the humanization of the B2B company.
Yes.
It's a really hard thing for you to do.
Yes.
And I work with a number of B2B companies, and I find that they are incredible at struggling to let go of their driven benefit.
Yeah.
And speaking about their messaging, and they still want to hang on to that. Having a third-party advocate as validation helps to give that humanity, but what would you say to that challenge of a B2B company? Have you experienced some best practices in how to humanize a company that maybe doesn't have a point person to take that on, to take on the personality?
There's a couple things, because you never know where your advocate is going to be. So the first thing is that I've actually used social media when product managers won't tell me what the difference between two products are. So if they won't give me descriptive features and benefits, and we all have this problem, don't we? Everyone wants to say it increases productivity and saves time. Yeah, that's helpful. So the main thing is that wouldn't you want to hear how your customers describe your features and benefits? Mm-hmm. Isn't there a value in that? And all of that can feed into all of your messaging, not just to sort of retweet that out in social media. You should be feeding that back into your search. You can be feeding that back into your A/B testing. So there's no reason, you have to think of these relationships that the messaging you drive from customers can be tested and proven in other areas and used across. Because this is how your customers speak, and there's no product team in the world that can deny that. So there's that part of it, that's the first part. We had two very similar products, and no one would tell me the difference because they didn't want to alienate any part of the customer base because both products sold really well. They were both really good products. And I had to go to social media and use social media listening to really spell out the value proposition of each. And I started using that in marketing. So there are examples out there. The other part of it with brand is that you probably have someone who's been functioning as a tech evangelist for a while. They may have a blog. They may be Twitter on their own. They're probably in the engineering group. And they've never seen the light of day, but they have fans who use the product. This is the people that the product users go to.
Right.
Talk to that person and see if you can get them involved. Because the other thing about social media is that nobody has time for it. It's not really easily scalable quite yet, especially if you're dealing with a niche. So if you can find that tech evangelist who's been answering questions like one or two off at a time every day. Reel him in and he will help you like nobody's business. You've got somebody in PR who wants to get ahead. You've got somebody in events who's really bored, and this makes their job really good because the off season, you know, so there's somebody who's making its job better, someone who it's not just a one-to-one phone call, it's a many-to-many phone call. You can have the people in your demo booth doing this. There are so many opportunities to bring in that humanizing brand. I've even had the receptionist working in social media because she was in school, she was studying this, she was a good writer, and after we did a couple months of sort of training wheels with her, she did a great job. You know, I remember she once put up like a holiday card. You know, people trashed it, and then customers came in and said, that's not nice. So you end up humanizing brand from any kind of contributor that you can get.
And that's, you know, I think that's really important to not only have the bottom-up listening and identify folks, but so many firms try so hard to look bigger than they are, and they get really sterile. And when you look at some of the best big firms out there, like possibly Apple and Steve Jobs or Salesforce.com, a lot of what's going on there is the culture that a guy named Benioff has built. And there are usually people in your organization, not always at the top, but they're all, even if they're not out there yet, you can help push them out there. They do care about their personal brand. They're reading everything. They have opinions on everything. They're already forwarding articles with three or four levels of commentary. They're just doing it on email, you know, to other folks. So some of it is surfacing that and pushing that out there and creating the process by which, you know, you do an extra 20% of effort, but you get 10x the return.
And the other thing is that you all have business partners. So there's affiliates, there's partners, there's people who do training for your product. If it's a very complicated product, they've all got enthusiasm that you can channel.
And people you write checks to that you have a little more leverage to lean on and say, we'd like you to do the following things in our ecosystem.
Cool. And I think we have one more question over there.
Just a little bit of a follow-up. I also work as a consultant. And my largest client is a B2B client that is number one really old school industry with a new marketing department, which is how I come in, right? And the new marketing people are so into moving the department forward. And then I've given a few presentations to their general sales force, and every time I do that, and I mention anything related to digital, not just social, you know, they go, oh, but, you know, we're good old boys, we go, and they don't even know how to use Twitter. And so my struggle isn't so much with the people that hire me, but trying to actually spread that to their own salespeople. And so I'm wondering if that's something.
That's a tough candy shop.
That's actually, it is. Maybe bounce,
sorry,
off the door. if you're looking at primarily the sales force, and these guys can probably help answer this one too, I always find that LinkedIn, again, is the gateway drug to understanding social media. They use it. They love it. They've used it for years. It's their favorite thing ever. That's how they get to their contacts. So they think that because they don't use social media because they're not using Twitter. But I bet they've watched a YouTube video recently, and I bet they looked at their client on LinkedIn before they met them. So it's sometimes just a matter of getting them to think differently. They're very relationship-driven, and they hear from the customers more directly. So they're actually, if you can get them lined up to it, and if you can give them even better intelligence than they expected on their sales target, they are thrilled.
And the baby steps. I mean, the things they already know collateral. They already know references and testimonials, and they already know events. So there are things that they're already doing traditionally that have digital analogs.
Oh, and then I was going to say, going back to Maura's point, getting sort of a traditional company into social media is not just about getting them to tweet or to have a Facebook page. A lot of it is about this concept of connecting and selling. And social media has done this amazing thing that if you want to know, if you want to sell to me personally and you want to know something about my life, all you need to do is Google me. You can follow my feed on Facebook. You can look me up on LinkedIn, get my background. You can follow me on Twitter and learn my interest. So in about 5 minutes of research, you can find out that in my spare time, my box, I grew up in New York. I work for Salesforce. I've been doing online marketing for almost 10 years. In 5 minutes, you can learn everything about me. So when a salesperson tries to call me up to talk about me, they can say, oh, you're from New York. Oh, I used to live in New York. Oh, did you watch the fight last night? And they could hook me on a personal level in about 30 seconds. And it's not just about, you know, tweeting. It's not just about listening to your customers. If you're trying to get the salespeople, use this connect and sell concept of spend 5 minutes, use social media listening to learn about who you're calling and prospecting to. Or maybe it's someone you've known for years, but through 5 minutes of research and social media, you can now be a stronger salesperson because you can get that personal hook into somebody so they're not going to blow you off. And someone did that, one of our potential suppliers did that to me on the phone one day and went, "You're from New York. I noticed you used to work at this restaurant 15 years ago. And I went, "How did you know that about me?" And they did a little bit of research, and the only reason I'm talking to them is because she got married at a restaurant that I worked at when I was like 17 years
old. See, most of us would be creeped out, and she's dead right. The creep out factor doesn't affect you at all.
And I'm like, "That is awesome. You did your research," and she did it in a very subtle way, and I was like, "I'm impressed. I think you have social media listening tools to know this about me."
And to bring it back to online and offline, we had a lot of disbelievers in the sales group. We started just doing a couple of tweets to say when the next demo was for a product at the booth, and we saw more people show up when we tweeted about what time the demo was. And that turned them around. So all the little things that you can try, just make sure that they're aware of it. Because if they don't know what gave them the bump, they're never going to give it the credit.
Well, you know, one thing that's never failed for any of our clients when the sales reps are saying, you know, the good old boy sales reps, is we start taking references and testimonials, and we make videos of them. And we put video testimonials up on the website where they're evergreen. And then we video SEO them, so they start getting found in all the Gartner category keywords on YouTube. And then we do crazy things like maybe they're paying 10 grand a month to some traditional PR firm that every once in a while gets lucky and gets an article. Well, with paid media, we can make that article still be read several years afterwards and be front and center. And the sales force is getting calls saying, "Hey, I just read about you on CIO.com. And we're like, "Yeah, that was a two-year-old article. Well done." So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do from the integration of taking traditional wins and bringing them digitally. And with some of that, it may just be baby steps. Any more? Go ahead.
My entire company is sitting in this room.
Then you should really go to the mic.
Can you not hear me?
Barely. That's sorry. And they need to hear you, too.
And I better aim at the mic.
My entire company is sitting in the room. We have a brand new product in a crowded niche. Microsoft is one of our competitors.
Oh, that's easy.
We don't have PR people. We don't have vendors. We don't have staff. We don't have budget. Can you at some point address a crawl, walk, run strategy for someone just getting into this?
Absolutely. And some of it's going to be playing where they're not playing or playing differently because you're not going to outspend them.
Oh, sorry. I knew. I didn't have that.
One of the good news about a thing like Microsoft is they have lots and lots of money, but the larger the firm, the more likely that their budget is held captive by really big marketing services agencies. And most of them, not all, but most of them really aren't quite all there digitally yet, and they're certainly not authentic when it comes to social media and telling a story. So you're going to have a leg up on being human.
And as a small business, you definitely have advantages over a larger company, be it Microsoft, being it the other large competitors, that you can move a lot more quickly than they can. So start with competitive research. I love competitive research. And use, on the keyword research side, use tools like Compete, like SpyFu, like SEMrush. Figure out what your competitors are doing and then do it better than they are. So take everything, learn everything you can about what your competitors are doing, figure out what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong. And as a small business, you can take what they're doing right, you can make it your own, and you could run with it faster than they'll ever be able to. And they might have all the money in the world, but maybe their Twitter feed is just automated bot service. So you can say, "Okay, I'm going to use Twitter promoted accounts. I'm going to go after this handle's competitors. I'm going to put my brand in front of all of their followers. I'm going to grow my Twitter community. I'm going to grow my Twitter followers." But you know they're just pushing out automated content, so you start engaging with their users. You start putting out thought leadership content. So take the areas that they're really not doing well in, figure it out, and do it better, and get in front of their people.
And they also have more bureaucracy. So they're going to have more gaps, and you can fill them faster. So it's getting ahead of where they're good, but also there's going to be whole areas where their bureaucracy won't let them in. They're not allowed to start things. There are big companies throughout the U.S. and the rest of North America where they just have policies against doing certain things, and that's an advantage for you.
One thing Maura brought up really briefly, but and there could be a whole conference, and there are conferences on nothing but this, but is conversion rate optimization. A subset of that is what's known as personas. You can't go after all the personas at once. Microsoft are going to have two or three buyer types, two or three profiles of companies that are their sweet spot, and their messaging is going to be primarily focused on those ones. So maybe you go after the, you know, the expressive types or the ornery cusses that take 5 years to buy or whatever particular persona type you're going for. Figure out where they're not focusing, where they're off message, and your message may be simply, we're not them. And there's 5% of the market that just for every reason says, that's all I wanted, someone who's as good as but not them. And probably 5% of a market Microsoft finds interesting might be enough for your company at this point. Okay, I don't want to go through that.
Oh, so I was like, a button-sized pricing guide. They'll never get to that, ever.
Yeah. Let's grab one more question, then a couple more slides, and then you can hit the stop button on the
and
train
I'm
anytime.
I'm going to give a lollipop to the guy who I hit in the head.
Okay.
And I had a question for you.
Okay, I'm going to try not to hit the one in front of you in the head.
3 or 4. keyword, I was trying to write them down.
The keyword research tool?
Yeah.
One of them is SpyFu, S-P-Y-F-U. That came out funny. Sorry. One of them is SEMrush.
Google's?
Google has one. There's some competitors. There's some paid ones that are, you know, that are a little more expensive than SpyFu. Compete does it. Conductor.
Conductor has a good one.
Brightish.
SEO Moz, which has a really good suite of SEO tools, so if you're not just looking for competitive research or looking for link development, you're looking for the whole package of SEO tools, check out SEO Moz. Premium, you can get a 30-day free trial. And if you do SpyFu, use their combat program. Their combat program lets you compare 3 or 4 or 5 different websites at the same time, and you can compare their paid search budget there, what keywords they're going after, both organically and paid. You can compare their ad text as well. So pretty good, super inexpensive.
If you do have money, Hitwise is a good one because it can tell you where where a person clicked on the search results instead of you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hitwise.
And then last one, we promise.
But by forcing somebody, you know, by bringing purpose, say I got a touchscreen table where you can order from and you can check your Facebook and you can Google search in a restaurant where they sit for 3 or 4 hours, you know, I mean, I feel like we've built, you know, a tool to where we can start getting so much income, or at least to help provide growth. But should I be going to Google to help, you know, make some customized for that, even though they're impossible to get a hold of, or maybe go to Facebook and see if they're willing to develop something specifically for our touchscreen tables. I mean, I just, you know, we're very limited on our resources today, but we have, say, 100 kiosks or touchscreen tables in the world where they could just bring us revenue just by people sitting there and being forced to head, you know, to a Google search.
You might want to try looking at Facebook also just to get a better sort of social set of social data built in as well. I still feel like people like being in the social space if they're in sort of a social environment, so you might want to look into that as well. I'm going to throw this and try not to hit anybody.
Yeah, there's also, I mean, Twitter also has a search engine. Facebook doesn't yet. And the other thing about Google is that we've been talking a little bit earlier, a lot of they're getting harder and harder to reach. They're getting less and less specialized, so it could be labyrinthian.
Let's jump to online.
Yeah, let's jump into a couple things on B2B marketing. One of the important things to remember is that a lot of the budget still occurs outside of digital. A lot of the budget's very operational and sales support. One of the problems that we have in the online industry is we get really myopic and we start to think that like SEO is the magic bullet or email's the magic bullet, and you have whole conferences where people are running around and so excited and they neglect the integration points. And a lot of the big wins in B2B involve multi-channel attribution, complicated tracking down a buying funnel, and the integration points. We'll talk a little bit more about events and online promotion in the next slide, but one thing to remember is that when you look at the forecast of where marketing dollars are going over the next several years in B2B, digital is the fastest rising, but event budgets are not shrinking. So other budgets, almost all the other budgets in B2B, there are a whole bunch of ad agencies out there that have managed to extract great amounts of dollars from their clients doing nothing but print brochures. Millions and millions of dollars for print brochures that goes and sits in a channel and then gets thrown away and never actually got out to the field. Most of that stuff is getting rationalized over the next several years, and the two places that are still growing are digital and events. There's there are multiple different things on that. In fact, we've got one we'll give away free. It was like a B2B magazine webinar. It was a 40-slide chart deck on how to triple your event ROI by infusing digital. If any of you have interest in that, just let me know, and I'll make sure that you get a free copy of that. But it's really big. The other thing is integrating digital tracking on anything you're doing in print. One tip there, much higher conversion rate if you're doing a postcard or dimensional mailer and you have vistaprint.com/small business, you're going to have a much lower compliance rate than if you have smallbusiness.vistaprint.com. So if you can use the subdomains and integrate that in, you're going to have a much higher type-in compliance because people still think that you have to type that one in. Otherwise, put in a promotion on that. That goes the other way as well. Think about things you can do from people who hit your website but didn't convert. Anyone here spending $50 to $100 to get a form filled out in B2B on the web? It gets a lot more expensive than B2C. How much does a name cost on Jigsaw? I'm sorry, data.com.
Data.com.
They didn't accept my naming recommendations post-merger, did they? No. Or on NetProspects, what, $5, $3?
$1,
even better. So if you spent $50 to get a form filled out, in B2B marketing, do people lie about their role in the buying process when they fill out a form? No, they'd never do that. No, it's just because, it's always the CIO who fills out that form, right? It's never the summer intern on a research project. So anytime you can figure out enough data from your website to know the company, that's a good time to go build a list around that company. And so use digital to drive offline and have a whole cascading set of events where the phone, your armies of phone banks and everything else and your dimensional mailers and all that stuff that used to work but doesn't work so well anymore, it works better if you're hitting them at an inflection point because someone's actually searching Google. So think about that. On the integrated marketing side, a couple small things I want to talk about here, then we'll move on to the next slide. One, when you get a PR win or a social media win, think about spending paid media to promote it. It's a between-the-cracks form of marketing that 99% of people miss. All of us got cut a lot of our teeth in the search industry where we spend all the live long day staring at the right side of Google and the left side of Google. Half of it's paid, the other half is earned. So we kind of think about this because pay-per-click and SEO are sort of kissing cousins of a sort, lots of shared DNA. Most ad agencies, they get paid media, but they want to spend your money to promote their art because they built you a little artsy, flashy site, and it's oh so pretty, and they need to win an Addy. And so they need to spend your paid media to promote their art. So they get paid media, but it's into their little pretty thing that may or may not work. On the other hand of the fence, PR firms go, oh, paid media. Well, that's if you're not good enough to get the earned media, which we do. And we look at it and say, well, we're kind of creepy, but we like them both. If you get an earned media win, it is more credible than someone's little flashy artsy site because someone else is saying it. It's a win. But heaven forbid, if you get a win, promote the heck out of it in any way, shape, or form. And sometimes your conversion is better when you promote it off-site. You get a blog post, an information week. Somebody in your industry says something nice about you. You can use Google AdWords to drive traffic into that for months. For months. There are a lot of independent industry analysts out there, believe it or not, that you can buy. Not that there's any, separation of church and state, and you can sponsor their brand on your white paper that you can now beat people into their website and have them download the white paper from their website in addition to downloading it on your website. Well, boy, now you actually have two spaces on Google AdWords, not just one. It's very important with limited keyword inventory. Something to keep in mind, once you get these forms, they're not going to buy right away. It's going to take them some time, and you got to nurture them. One of the real problems with B2B marketing is that a lot of forms are not initially sales ready, and they go and they sit in an email database. If you're fancy enough and have a big enough list, you could call it a marketing automation database, until 9 months later, some dude wearing a little shiny hat called Webinar Man comes and claims 100% credit for that sales lead, when actually the list was built by search. Anyone here from Austin? Anyone here of a company called Austin Ventures? They really like to get folks from Wharton and Harvard MBAs to be their VPs of marketing. And they go through them at a prodigious rate. And I can't tell you how many we've worked with where we come in there and say, what do you think about search? And they go, yeah, search is okay. But, you know, I really prefer email because those leads are free. And we're thinking, well, no, actually, it was your predecessor who spent the money to build the list that you're now claiming credit for. So it's important to have that attribution and that nurturing where you can assign whatever weighting you want, you know, kind of first touch, last touch, but you always have to be refreshing the top end of your list and funnel. And search and social are what do that. Marketing automation is a great tool if you can afford it. If you have a small email list, you only have, you know, 10,000 names or fewer, it's probably overkill. But when you start getting into the mid five figures of email addresses and you're doing segmentation and you're having complicated campaigns and you don't want to have to go back to your email tool twice a day and hit the start button or push button, it can have a really powerful ROI. So for a lot of firms, we love to see that working. It's important to integrate. Well, let's talk a little bit about lead scoring. One of the things you can do when you get more sophisticated is you can actually put some automated filters based on what's happening on your website and what's happening in your email system to have a predictive analytics about when is it ready for sales to call. Now, keep in mind, this is an advanced strategy. There's lots of buzz around this right now, but it's kind of like if you haven't got the foundation in place, it's sort of like worrying about how you're going to finish out your kitchen when you haven't put the roof on your house yet. So first things first, build a list, make sure it's big enough, and only when sales starts complaining that they are not getting, they're getting too many leads and the quality sucks, does it really make sense. Lead scoring really is just filtering. It's a good thing to do, but it's an element of abundance, not an element of scarcity. If your sales team is saying not enough leads yet, continue serving them meatloaf rather than pure hamburger as a marketer, right? You know, they've got to have enough to keep busy. But lead scoring is a good thing. Tie your systems together. Vitally important, because stuff that generates clicks doesn't necessarily generate forms. Stuff that generates forms does not necessarily generate sales-ready leads. Sales-ready leads don't necessarily generate sales. And so you need to be able to track this at every step down the buying funnel. And the basic of it, the elemental thing is tie your web analytics system into your CRM system. That's step one. There are multiple ways of doing that. I think before we've presented a 7 or 8 page outline on it, which we could, you know, if you want that too, give us a card. We'll send you kind of the 8 steps or eight charts on the 20 steps of how to do this. Second thing is tie in the email database. Tie in the marketing automation, because in B2B, 95 out of 100 web forms are not going to be ready for that demo or quote. But they're going to go sit in a database and be loved on for hopefully only 90 days, but sometimes 9 years before they're ready. But you still want to know what got them in the database initially. HubSpot is masterful at that. And make sure that if you get a chance, talk to Jeffrey, get his book on social media. One of the things they've done phenomenal, they've built up over 1 million names now in their database. And I think they know where just about everyone came from. And it wasn't all from the website grader way back when. And I'm going to turn it back over to Mark.
I think I'm wired.
Oh, you're wired.
Yeah, I can hop off the stage now. It's fun. So this is the last thing that we wanted to go through, because marketing mix is a really important topic that we never really think about as much. We've heard a lot of questions from people who are going into digital and joining the new media team. Southwest is all about new media. And we all know that digital and new media are not getting any money. So we're going to divide those into two. Even though we know digital is more effective, there's a lot of information in the book. We can share it afterwards. There's a lot of information out there from HubSpot, from Forrester, from eMarketer, and from a bazillion other groups that show digital is more effective. Digital has better ROI. HubSpot came with a really good one that showed that social and other inbound marketing, which is the same as earned media, gets the lowest cost per lead. And these things have to be pushed for everybody here to get a better budget because we're all underfunded, right? Is anybody here overfunded? You might want to come up here for a minute. But the main part of it is making that argument so you can shift more of that traditional budget, the print budget, the event budget, all of those things where the ROI is unknown, unpredictable, untested. See if you can move it to digital because you can at least show something, which is both a blessing and a curse. The other part of that is not just in digital. You've also got to reserve some of it for innovation. Because at the beginning of last year, you didn't know that Twitter was going to advertise. You couldn't say, oh yeah, Q4, I'm going to reserve $50,000 so I can get in that Twitter beta. You can't do that at the beginning of the year. At the beginning of each year, everybody says, this is the year of mobile. Oh wait, maybe it's not. But you know, it might be now.
I think it is this time.
We all want to deal with community eventually. This could be the year.
Next year, second life.
So you have to reserve for that. Nobody knew last year at South By that this was going to be the year of Pinterest. And when you started your budget, you didn't reserve the allocation of a writer or anybody to look at that. And you have to put that unpredictability into your marketing mix. And there are a lot of problems we have with marketing mix. There's usually not enough in brand. You look at brand, you look at nurturing, lead nurturing and lead management. You look at product marketing and product development. You look at all of these different components. They're typically very imbalanced in your company. So that's one thing you have to look at. You have to look at where you're spending the money, even if you don't have the capacity to look at how it's coming back, at least track where you're spending it. Because a lot of people probably don't even know. For one example, we thought that there was no spend in email. Turns out it was over $1 million. Until you look at the invoices, you need to know what you spend before you plan. So that's a big part of it. And moving as much as you can testably over to digital and to new media is really important. 20% of your budget should be for those unpredictable innovation factors. Another part of it is analyzing that effectiveness, because you're going to need to be able to forecast as much as possible. There's the ROI question, but then you're not going to get the budget until you can say, oh yeah, I know based on my earlier tests that if I do this, I can guarantee you, a 2x ROI or a 4x ROI. They're going to want to hear that estimates until for the next couple of years because of the way the economy is, even if they have a huge amount in the bank, which most corporations do right now. Those are the things to keep in mind. Two great studies I want to mention before we open it up to questions. One is from Marketing Profs. They found that, and this is really specific to B2B, they found that people weren't doing marketing budget by role. Everyone's aiming the end user. So 40% of most budgets are going to the end user, not the decision maker. You have to have a completely set of marketing materials and a marketing budget to reach that person who's actually going to be signing the PO. Who's going to be signing the scope of work. You know those three signatures that you need to get? You need to talk to those people too. No one's marketing to them. Every single company is under-marketing to that group. That's one important study that came out this year. The other one is one with Adobe and MarketShare. I'm not sure if you've heard of MarketShare. There are a couple other ones that are very similar. Zaxis, I think, is one. Mm-hmm. You guys might know of some others. No one in the tech world has been able to replicate this study, but it's pretty awesome. We did a case study on them because they took economic data. They took stock market data and stock market forecasting data. They took world events. They took their traditional marketing budget input, and they took their digital marketing budget, and they looked at all of it to figure out what was having the most impact. And they are a digital marketing company. They found their biggest halo was from PR. No one in the company expected that. So you need to look at some of these different factors, line them all up, do the basics as an economic model, not just where your heart is. Because you'll find unexpected things. You could find that traditional is having a very big impact on your digital. You may find that you need to think a lot more about online and offline than you suspected. Or you may find that you're getting a much bigger bump from social than you did without ever publishing. So you have all of these factors to consider, but you really need to look at where you're spending, protect where you need to be able to test. Mobile's one example. Different groups, different potential spend. And then you need to be able to go in and think about how it all fits together with a closed-loop analytics system. So to wrap it all up, we have a quick pitch. Well, we're all hiring, but Not all of us.
All three of our companies are hiring. If you want to have a really fun job, Moore is hiring a writer at the Adventure Travel Company. Bill is hiring people at a local search agency. And the one pitch I told my job that I would do, so they'd let me come here, is Salesforce is hiring. We're hiring 2,000 people this year. So if you want a job, send me your resume so I can get the referral bonus.
And you hire globally. Right?
And we hire globally. And I'd like the referral bonus, but that's my only pitch.
So we've got a lot of A to Z here. We didn't go into a lot of detail because it's everything you could possibly want to know about B2B marketing. So please feel free to hit us now with any detailed questions on any of these subjects.
And we have candy. And please, questions, comments, concerns.
And we also have beer in the exhibit hall at booth 627 between 4 and 6 tomorrow. So if you have long lines for the other free beer you're struggling with and you want to start having the free beer earlier, come to booth 627 in the exhibit hall between 4 and 6. And I'm going to try to rope you two into that tomorrow, too. 625, I'm sorry. One of these days I'll figure out where my booth is.
Got a question. You mentioned at the end mobile. Is mobile, do you have any experience with mobile B2B? Could you talk about that?
I'm going to throw you candy too. I'm going to try not to hit anybody. I'm getting almost better at this. Good thing the presentation's over. So with mobile B2B, I've heard it's going to be the year of mobile for about 7 years now. I'm really excited because I actually for real think it is this time. With mobile B2B, this is important. Who has an iPad? That's more important than this right now. Right now, demographic-wise, iPads are still actually skewing a professional higher income, where my 11-year-old niece has an iPhone. My 11-year-old niece does not have an iPad. So when you're thinking mobile B2B, think iPad almost more than iPhone, more than smartphones, because iPads are still skewing high-income, high-education professional. When you're building a mobile experience, when you're building a mobile web experience, the other thing we all need to keep in mind is, I know we want every piece of information humanly possible. I'm not going to fill that out on my smartphone or on my iPad. A lot of your mobile leads, you're going to have to put in a nurture campaign. You're not going to get 15 fields on a mobile device. I know it's going to be hard for your sales team to accept the fact that the only thing you can really get is name, company, and email address.
Unless you give away something really high value, and then you can get a phone number.
Yes. And that's if you're giving away. No, an iPad still isn't enough to give me for a phone number. But put it in a drip campaign so you can market to them later and get them on their desktop. So long drawn out story short, mobile is finally starting to become important for B2B. It is not a deal breaker yet. If you're not there, it probably will be soon.
One really quick thing you can do right now on mobile B2B is, from a social perspective, anyone looking at the Twitter stream of this conference and notice that American Express has the sponsored tweet, that is pretty expensive. But at most B2B events, most of the ones you'd ever go to and spend money to exhibit at, because B2B events, many of them are smaller and very verticalized, doing the Twitter hashtag takeover is incredibly cost-effective and gives you a phenomenal presence. In fact, it allows you to be at events that you're not at. So consider that as something you can do with a mobile device.
And to echo off of that, thinking about B2B, since events are so big in the, there's the New York accent. Since events are so big in the B2B market, you want to think about how you can get at the event. So use geo-targeting. So if you're at, what is your industry?
Media.
So if you're at a media event, say it costs you $50,000 to get a booth at that media event, use geo-targeting with mobile ads. So when someone is at, say, the Austin Convention Center, and they are on their mobile device, your ads will start showing up. It's a lot more cost-effective to surround a conference with your mobile presence than it is to exhibit at that. You could also use your mobile ads to send people to a booth if you have one, or to send someone to a bar to meet you for a drink. So consider mobile to sort of net around an event.
She did some amazing things with that. Yeah,
a few quick things that are a little bit different than this. You can test emailing. If you're doing Legion, you can test the email call to action. So you can, when you're on your mobile device, you can have a call to action as, email me this information. Then they get it on their desktop. That might be easier to get them to a product trial. You can at least test that and see if it works. The other thing is, we're talking really Legion-specific things. It's very good for branding. And I have two examples of that. Because the traffic is jumping. The company, the adventure travel company that I'm at right now, just saw the percentage of people going from a tablet quadruple in 1 month just over the holidays. So a lot of people got iPads for Christmas. You need to check your mobile numbers again. If you only checked them a quarter ago, it's now stale. Branding is another thing, both in advertising, because advertising on mobile apps and advertising in mobile in general is cheaper and has a higher click-through rate because there's not blindness yet. The other thing that you can do that I think Autodesk did phenomenally well is if you have an app for your product that's a different version of your product, can be great. Sketchbook Pro really introduced Autodesk CAD products to an entirely different market. So we had children, four-year-olds, using sketching products, and before that, they never knew what Autodesk did. So it's an outreach thing. You can also really relate to a lot more people. It makes your brand, it's getting your brand out there through what you do, what the product does, and not just as content. It's an action as well.
So we're at about 6 o'clock, so we'll take one more question, and we promise to keep the answer under 15 seconds each, which is going to be difficult for us. So do we have one final question? Yes.
It used to be 5-10 years ago, anytime you'd request more information from a company, it would be a white paper, a PDF download. Does that still happen?
Yes. We're still doing white papers, but you need... White papers are still good. You do need the occasional sexy offer. An ebook, a demo works well in B2B, a free trial if you can have it, if you can provide a free trial in B2B. The other thing is kind of play with the types of offers around social media. Maybe webinars aren't quite that sexy anymore, but maybe you can do like Twitter. If you have a Twitter business page, you can actually stream video on it. So think about doing, instead of a tweet chat, having your offer as, why don't you watch the CEO tweet live, and you could ask him questions live to make it a little more interactive. It makes webinars a little more social, but we still use white papers.
We're seeing rich media convert better for a lot of our clients. So if they can move the white paper, it still works, but if you can move the white paper into, you know, even if it's just a PowerPoint with a voiceover, well, that's an internet video. So how do you make it more active and more engaging and move beyond the straight-up white paper? Different personas like to consume their data in different ways, and it's nice to have a mix of options out there for them. But the more things you have that are relevant, rich media going on the page, the better it's working for
we
a lot of our...
We can keep to 15 seconds.
Facecast do really well, and Google Plus, 10 people in a hangout with your tech evangelists.
Yes.
So thank you guys for the shout-out on my book. And anybody who has been here all day, if you have a couple minutes, I'd love to talk to you and just do quick video of, you know, B2B hardcore at South by Southwest.
Yes.
Because it's really important that everybody knows that B2B is an important part of all this digital media and social media.
This is kind of the first time they've done a baby step into B2B. It's been a very, very consumer-focused event. So we're biased. We'd like this to come back again next year and be four times the size.
Ooh, one more super quick pitch for me. If you're a Salesforce customer or if you're not, Dreamforce is Salesforce's user conference. It's September 18th. We had Metallica play last year, and it was awesome. We had Bill Clinton keynote the year before. It's a huge conference. I run the online marketing section of the marketing track. So last year there were 8 B2B specific online marketing sessions about conversion and search and social. There were a dozen social sessions. It's an awesome conference. If you sign up now, it's super cheap. And I'm done.
Of course, thanks.